Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. For one unforgettable week in 1972, the revolution was televised. Daytime Revolution takes us back to a time to the week that John Lennon and Yoko Ono descended upon the Philadelphia Broadcasting Studio to co-host the iconic Mike Douglas Show, at the time the most popular show on daytime TV with an estimated 40 million viewers a week. What followed was five unforgettable episodes of television in which John and Yoko welcomed to the program people like Jerry Rubin, Bobby Seale, Ralph Nader, and George Carlin. It's an amazing slice of American history, American culture, and we're joined today by the director, Eric Nelson. Eric, welcome back to Film School Radio.
Oh, pleasure to be back.
Because the last time you were on, we talked about your film Apocalypse 45, which was about World War II and other issues, other things, historic events. What put you onto this?
I found this one week in 1972, an amazing juncture of both phenomenal cultural history and phenomenal political history. And that's when John and Yoko Lennon literally hijacked the Mike Douglas Show, at the time the most popular daytime talk show in America, and booked the guests and co-hosted the show. They became mainstream TV hosts for one week to disseminate an intensely political, radical message to a mass audience of about 40 million people at the time when the population of the United States was a lot less than it is today. And I felt that sufficient attention had not been paid to that. And because I've done a lot of films that revolve around the discovery and rehabilitation of archive, this seemed like a natural project.
Do you remember this?
I vaguely remember it. I remember that Mike Douglas had John and Yoko on, but I re-remembered it in the late 90s when Rhino Video put out on VHS tapes all five of the episodes. I didn't buy them, but I was aware of them. And in the back of my mind, this thing was obviously festering. And because I'm a Beatle maniac and a huge fan of John Lennon's, I felt in an extensively documented career, this one thing had not been talked about. And in fact, there's a book length, a wonderful biography of Yoko Ono by Madeline Baccaro. I think it's the only full length biography of Yoko. And this isn't discussed at all, nor is it mentioned in a lot of the full length biographies of John Lennon. This just seemed to have escaped attention. So I wanted to rectify that.
Two things we'll get into. One is for people who may have never even heard the name Mike Douglas before, or may be vaguely familiar through some archival footage they saw of something else. What was your impression of Mike Douglas? I grew up with him, watching him. How would you describe him to someone who doesn't know who he is?
Well, Mike Douglas was Mr. Mainstream Talk Show. His audience was housewives. He was defiantly middle of the road. He was a band leader. He was in his early 50s. His show could not have been more kind of happy mainstream entertainment. So the idea of John and Yoko Lennon crashing that party and bringing on Bobby Seale and Jerry Rubin, Elephant's Memory, and Yoko's conceptual art pieces was astonishing. It still is astonishing. And anyone who watches the movie will see the collision happening in real time.
It's still jarring to watch. I mean, even in the context, here we are 50 years later, that this kind of very buttoned down guy, although I have to give him credit because for him being so open-minded, and by all appearances in the film and his interaction with John and Yoko on camera, he appears to be very much comfortable with them no matter. I mean, there's some, even in today's context, there's some strange things that Yoko brought to the proceedings.
Really? Yoko Ono bringing strange things to the proceeding? No, Mike Douglas deserves a colossal amount of credit. He was amazing. He was warm, funny, engaging. He was able to crack through Jerry Rubin's bad boy's self and have him talk articulately about the passing of his father. He warms up Bobby Seale by referencing that Bobby Seale is once a stand-up comic. He rolls with anything Yoko throws at him. He makes John instantly comfortable and empathetic when John talks about his father and his family. And, you know, and by the end of the five shows, which originally were taped across five different weeks, you really see John and Yoko warming up. And by the last show, you know, John should have thought about an alternate history as a TV host. He was wonderful. And that's a John Lennon that, despite the oversaturation of John Lennon in our culture, I don't think anybody has seen before.
Yeah, exactly the reaction I had, that Mike Douglas, no matter how many sort of curveballs were thrown at him in terms of the people that were brought on by virtue of their appearances there, but also, he, just as you described it, his ability to make everyone comfortable and to hear John talk about his father, to talk about his aunt who raised him, to talk about his influences, and to talk about the Beatles in the context of something that just happened. They broke up in 71, if memory serves.
No, they broke up in early 70. So this
70.
Would be
this
would be about 2 years after the Beatles broke up.
Okay.
And then John and Yoko moved to New York in 1971 and were really planning on living their lives happily or disruptively in the United States. But then they do these Mike Douglas shows. Richard Nixon gets on their tail because the evil genius Roger Ailes, the guy who would go on to create Fox News, is in the studio and alerts Richard Nixon, uh-oh, these people might imperil your reelection campaign of 1972. And the paranoid Richard Nixon declares war on John and Yoko, which was the subject of a film that I was the executive producer of about 15 years back called The U.S. versus John Lennon. That was part of, this was the inciting incident that led to the deportation attempts that where Nixon tried to get John Lennon deported without success, but that consumed 3 years of John's life.
And also impacted his musical interest in music. And there were a lot of ramifications to what happened because of that. And you mentioned Roger Ailes. He was he a producer? Correct me if I'm wrong.
He was a producer on the Mike Douglas show. He's the guy who became Nixon's media consultant in 1968 and put his evil genius to work to get Nixon elected president. He micromanaged Nixon's TV appearances. In fact, a book, The Selling of the President by Joe McGinnis, documented that. And by 72, I don't know if he was on the staff of the Douglas show, but he was certainly a guy who was welcome to hang out in the studio anytime he wanted. So that's what brought Ailes there. And we have an eyewitness, Ralph Nader, who we interviewed for this film, remembers Roger Ailes watching this go down and stroking his chin as the light bulb went off over his head, that mainstream American TV could turn into a vehicle for propaganda. John and Yoko were putting out sort of good vibe, good 60s, good karma type things. Needless to say, Fox News put out an entirely different message.
It, boy, when you see these kinds of nexus in front of you and you see just how the ripple effect of all of those things, you can't watch this. It's this, and I'm sure all of the episodes, without coming away from watching those shows, without feeling, yeah, John is not some radical monster. Yoko is in fact brilliant at what she does. It may not be for everybody. It may not be a mainstream kind of thing that she is throwing her life into in terms of art. But these are decent people who all really they care about is creating a better world. And we see, by the way, I don't think I'm giving away too much. We see John playing Imagine in the film and just reminding us of the kind of person that he was.
Yeah, he in episode four, I think he sang Imagine. And because we laid the shows out in chronological order, usually, you know, you start with Imagine if you're making a documentary. That's the big highlight. To me, Imagine has been overused. I put Imagine where it appeared chronologically in the shows. And then we move on. And then in the last show, we see George Carlin, who was did his thing. So You know, when you think about it, George Carlin, Bobby Seale, Jerry Rubin, John Lennon doing Imagine, John Lennon meeting his idol, Chuck Berry, for the first time in the green room, and then going out and pretty much improvising a great raucous version of Memphis, Tennessee. All of this went down broadcast across this one week in mid-February of 1972.
Everything about the film, is it inviting? It is, I would say, positive vibes is a way of saying it, but everything about it is in keeping with many of the things that were later thought of as ridiculous and ridiculed and exaggerated for comedic effect. You see in real time that these were decent people.
They're decent people, and it's a prescient message. And we were very conscious making the film, the times that we live in now. And we were super conscious of releasing the film just before this apocalyptic election. It is not a coincidence that the film is being released in theaters on October 9th, John Lennon's 84th birthday. That answers the question, will we still need him when he's 84? Because in fact, we do need him. Yeah. And what they're saying in these shows and in this film is absolutely relevant today. And that is not coincidental. It's not accidental, but it is an accurate depiction of what went down in the studio. Because we're using the archive, we're letting the shows breathe and ventilate. We're not putting words in John's mouth, nor are we having people, talking heads, contextualize what John was thinking. You can see John thinking and saying it in real time. The only people who appear in the film are people who were guests on the show that week in that studio, who in some cases were watching their appearance for the first time in 50 years just before we rolled tape on their interview. So there's hopefully a freshness to it and an immediacy to it, and its relevance to our times today. Mike, you've seen it, and you're making that connection. And I think the film will do that for people who view it. I'm not in the feature documentary business in this film. I'm in the transportation business. I want to transport people back to 1972 to see a John Lennon and a Yoko Ono they've never seen before, along with a wonderful mainstream best of middle America guy like Mike Douglas do their thing, to remind people what Americans were capable of and what America still is capable of if only we try harder.
The film is called Daytime Revolution. And as you said, again, it's being released on October 9th, John Lennon's 84th birthday. You can be looking for it in over 50 cities nationwide, including New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Miami, Washington, D.C., and many, many more. Kino Lorber is releasing the film, so you can go to the kinolorber.com, I believe. I'll fix that in post.
Just punch in the Google Daytime Revolution Kino, K-I-N-O, Lorber, and you'll pop it right up.
Yeah, L-O-R-B-E-R.
Lorber. Correct.
You mentioned something, the Ralph Nader appearance. By the way, you have people today talking about their appearance alongside John and Yoko. Ralph Nader, is great to see him. And also, going back to the George Carlin, this is right after he went from, because people won't remember this, I doubt they'll remember, that George Carlin started out as your standard issue stand-up comedian who did stand-up on Ed Sullivan's show as the guy with the clean-cut guy with the and had the jokes, the one right after the other. And it was during the period of time Carlin was making that transition that we see in this one particular episode of the Mike Douglas show, where he was being asked about that. And again, there's so many revelatory moments. You mentioned Bobby Seale, you mentioned Jerry Rubin. Absolutely. And Mike Douglas's ability to break that down into something that is relatable, really wonderful to watch.
Yeah, it is. And it's really all power to Mike Douglas. I mean, John and Yoko were fantastic and brought their A game. And I've never seen John Lennon look so good, be so comfortable, be at peace with himself, his music, answering questions from people in the audience about, hey, what do you think of Paul McCartney's new Wings album? And Lennon answers it just beautifully. I won't give it away, but very candidly and honestly. But it's Mike Douglas, and by proxy, Mike Douglas's living room, which is what he basically created, that gets this all across.
And to see John Lennon play live, and One thing I want to leave people with is to tease them a little bit. The teacup. I'll just say the teacup.
Yeah, well, Yoko, being Yoko and being a conceptual artist, has this process where she has a shattered teacup and she's putting the teacup together again. She's reuniting the teacup with itself across the five episodes. Mike is a little confused about it. John Lennon is a little confused about it and sort of saying, yeah, you know how Yoko gets, Mike. You know, he's definitely being, which is a totally revelatory. You see John Lennon kind of roll his eyes at Yoko, but it's a lovely piece of conceptual art and she pulls it off. And at the end of the show, she puts the teacup together. And we won't give away the smile box now, will we?
But, no, we won't.
But these are all wonderful humanistic things. And I've always had a lot of respect for Yoko. I have never been one who demonized her. I always felt that she didn't break up the Beatles. The Beatles broke up the Beatles. And I think there's an argument that if Yoko hadn't come into John's life when she did, we wouldn't have a White Album and we wouldn't have an Abbey Road, because I think John was already kind of falling apart and Yoko helped put him back together. I think also Ralph Nader, who's just fantastic both then and now, deserves credit. And hopefully after this film, people will stop giving him crap for Al Gore running the single worst presidential campaign in American history in 2000 and losing by that margin. It wasn't Ralph Nader who caused Al Gore to lose. It was Al Gore. And I've always been sort of upset when people think, oh, well, you know, if Ralph Nader hadn't run for president, if, you know, that election came down to 530 votes in Palm Beach, I think there were bigger problems with the Gore campaign than Ralph Nader.
Amen. Amen to that. There is one moment that for me kind of encapsulates Mike Douglas's commitment to this idea, which is him lying on the studio floor while they go through a biofeedback.
Well, yeah, set the scene. They have a musician, David Rosenbaum, avant-garde musician.
Yes.
Who's in the film and still has a wonderful career today, has hooked them up. He is hooked up with an EKG around their foreheads. Mike Douglas, John Lennon, and Chuck Berry jacked into a synthesizer, and their brainwaves are controlling the synthesizer, and he's creating a musical happening live in the studio. And it works, and you can hear it happen, and Mike Douglas is part of it, and Mike's brainwaves are driving the synthesizer. Thanks. And for Mike Douglas, who's a musician, singer, band leader, to go along with that, and also maybe to go along where John Lennon, Yoko Ono, Chuck Berry are in aprons cooking macrobiotic food in a cooking show bit and totally with it. I don't know how much Chuck Berry was with the program, but John and Yoko and Mike certainly were with the program. And we interviewed the then 23-year-old chef who was kind of roped into doing this. And so the whole thing is insane and insanely appealing and insanely optimistic.
Exactly. And it's the kind of thing that you could have seen on Saturday Night Live a few years later being made fun of, in a sense, being kind of, but
well, being
not
cynical, being cynical, yeah, and making fun and taking easy shots at it, something that Saturday Night Live has been doing for about 50 years now. But, you know, this was as good as television gets. Just even if you don't buy into the political message, you're not a Beatle fan, just watching this medium be completely subverted and hijacked is a slow motion bus wreck, but the bus is reassembled into a magic bus by the end of it.
Amen. Amen. I am so glad you made this film. I am so glad I got a chance to see it. And again, for people who are interested in seeing Daytime Revolution, it will be available in theaters on October 9th, John Lennon's 84th birthday, in New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Miami, Washington, D.C., and many, many more. And once again, you can go to Kino Lorber and type in Kino Lorber and also Daytime Revolution or Revolution, and this will pop up, so you'll be able to see all of it. What an unexpected delight to have this just sort of come out of nowhere for me and to see it. to really connect with the humanity of these two people. I'm so happy that I was able to experience this. So thank you.
Well, thank you. We've done all we can to put this out at a time when I think America needs to see something this uplifting and this optimistic. So we're hoping the word gets out and people show up and, you know, the film reaches, I'm pretty sure we're not going to reach 40 million people the day of release in the 50 theaters it's in, but, you know, we got to start somewhere, right?
Well, the film again, Daytime Revolution, we've been speaking with the director of this terrific documentary film, Eric Nelson. Eric, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Mike.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.